My name's Will DeFreeze, and this is the Sunday Scaries Podcast, your cure for the Sunday blues. This week, we'll be diving into some listener questions, most of which are fall-themed, which I absolutely do not hate. Let's get right into them. The first, what's your ideal fall outfit? I have to say, fall is the absolute best season to get dressed during. I'm big into heavy layers, heavy shirts, large sweaters, vests, pullovers, quarter zips, pretty much anything that has fabric I want to put on myself at that point. But if I had to get dressed for fall right now, I think I'd do this. I like a thick, long sleeve cotton t-shirt. Whether it's a pocket tee or something else, I don't really care. As long as it's thick and cotton, I'm going to be happy in it. A cashmere sweater over it. I don't know why, and I mean, I guess I do know why, because cashmere is just incredibly soft, but having a cashmere sweater on is just the most comforting thing in the world. Over that, I'd like to toss a vest on there. I don't know what kind of vest, whether it's one that you want to wear skiing as a layer, or it's like a Filson vest, or even a Filson jacket that you can put over everything. Having that outdoor layer kind of not only gives you a nice aesthetic, as douchey as that sounds, but it's just kind of good looking. I also like a thick pair of khakis that are kind of cuffed. I don't know why I like cuffing my pants, but I just do. And a thick pair of wool socks. And then on top, or on the, I guess on the bottom of all of it, a pair of boots, probably Chukka boots, which I kind of need to re-up on. It's been a while since I've gotten some. And to be honest, my boot game right now is lacking, but in Texas, I don't really need boots as much as I thought I would, despite how many people down here are wearing cowboy boots. But it's also unseasonably warm in a lot of places, whether it's an Indian summer or whether it's just you being in Texas like me. Sometimes a thick short sleeve cotton shirt, whether it's from Filson, like I said, Tailor Stitch is another company I love. Put that underneath a vest and you have a look going. You can still do the chinos, maybe some Vans without socks. It's just a great outfit for me. Most Texans hate that people wear short sleeves with a vest, but kind of that makes it even more fun to wear. I don't really mind. Next question. What fall beers are on deck this season? Cocktails? My favorite fall beers aren't that original. I'm pretty tried and true when I drink beer, and I kind of have the ones that I just stick to. But when it's crisp outside, fall beers hit harder than anything else. I will say, there are no pumpkin things on this list, and it's mainly because I don't really have a pumpkin beer that I love. If you have any suggestions, please send them to me. I'm very open to trying them. Just not too much pumpkin flavor, please. But the first beer is a Bell's Two Hearted Ale. It's from Kalamazoo, Michigan. I love Bell's Brewery. It's an IPA, super hoppy, the perfect fall beer from taste-wise, as well as the packaging of it. It's just got a fish on it, and it looks like the fall beer. They also have a Light Hearted Ale, which is kind of like a lower ABV version of the Two Hearted Ale. And I will say, I actually do enjoy it. Some people don't like it as much, but I actually love it. Another Bell's beer is the Official IPA. They recently started putting this in cans, I think last year. It's a hazy IPA. It's a great alternative if you just don't want the regular two-hearted. It's just great. And then the final IPA on this list is the Odell IPA from Odell in Fort Collins. It's recommended from a friend, and I absolutely loved it the first time I had it. It just tastes like your perfect IPA. It's just an all-around great beer, and if you can find it on draft, even better. Another beer that I like is a dark beer that you've probably heard of before, Guinness. Obviously, it's a lighter dark beer that goes down way too easily for me. I can drink a lot of these in succession, and I don't really feel bad about it. And most mornings, I don't really feel too bad after drinking a bunch of them. And then the final one is a Moosehead Canadian Lager. And that's if we're going lighter. And again, it's very fall feeling. The green bottle, the moose on it, just all the branding. It just feels like the perfect fall beer when you're looking for something a little lighter instead of an IPA or a darker beer. As for cocktails, I'm a pretty simple man when it comes to fall cocktails. I don't really mix too many up. A scotch on the rocks, maybe an old fashioned, or my tried and true classic martini that never really goes out of style. Next question. All my candles are tunneling. What can I do to stop it from happening? If you're not sure what this means, tunneling is when a candle burns down the center, leaving an alley of wax pretty much all around it. It's like you're digging a hole for yourself as the wick. Tunneling is bad because you're not maximizing the candle's burn time because so much wax is going completely unused. And so instead of getting a 40 to 60 hour burn time or a 30 hour burn time, whatever that candle may be, you're gonna have a much lower one, which just means you're kind of just throwing money away. There are a couple things you can do to prevent it. You need to make sure that you properly burn your candle the first time you burn it. Most people don't realize that you need to do this, but it will save the life of your candle. And if you start burning it too little in the beginning, then you're just going to screw yourself. You have to trim the wick down, as you know, and then burn the candle for an hour for every inch of diameter of the candle. So if it's a 4-inch candle, 4 hours. It seems like a long time, but if it's a Sunday afternoon, just light a candle and enjoy it. Do not blow out the candle after 20 minutes. I know you might have to go run an errand or something like that. I'm not telling you to leave it burning in your apartment, but just do everything you can to set aside some time for that first initial burn. Second, wrap foil around the top of the candle if it's already started tunneling. You have to take the foil, wrap it around the top, and create kind of a dome or a tent of foil on top of the candle. You don't want to create something that covers the candle completely, but you definitely want to create something that gives a little, almost like a volcano. And then you burn that for about 30 minutes, and it should try to even almost everything out. It might not be perfect, but it is a good little hack. And I've never done this next technique before, but I read online while researching this that you should use a tea light burner. To use a tea light burner, this is from the place where I got it. It was a random candle site. I apologize for not having a source on this, but they said, to use a tea light burner, just remove the scented wax from your unusable candle. You can see the methods of whatever. And then you place it on top of the burner. Do not add water to the wax. Then place a lit tea light into the burner's base and allow the flame to heat and melt the wax above, distributing the scent. Like I said, I've never done that technique, but I do see why it would work, and it kind of makes sense to me. So if you need to do that, go ahead and do it. Next one. What are your favorite ice cream brands and flavors? This is not super well known about me, but I absolutely love ice cream. I was fortunate enough to grow up in a small town in Michigan, as you've probably heard if you've listened to other podcasts, but I was blessed with great ice cream. We had two places in town that both made their own ice cream, and so I kind of grew up with this homemade great ice cream. My go-to ice creams are pretty decadent and pretty rich. The first is one that you've definitely heard of before. It's Ben & Jerry's Half-Baked. I think it's their most popular flavor, if I'm not mistaken. Chocolate, vanilla ice cream, gobs of chocolate chip cookie dough, and fudge brownies. I love cookie dough, I love brownies, and I like pretty much every ice cream. It's pretty much the perfect ice cream for me, even though it's by Ben & Jerry's, and sometimes it's nice to be a little basic. Another one is local in Austin. There's a place called Milk & Cookies. It's a part of a restaurant called Tiny Boxwoods, and they have some of the best cookies I've ever had in my entire life. And because of that, they have a little side ice cream place where you can actually go buy their ice cream, and their chocolate chip cookie dough, which is called Milk & Cookies, is probably the greatest cookie dough ice cream I've ever had. You don't get the big chunks, but you get a lot of smaller chunks in it, and it's just great. And then the final one is by a company that I used to go to pretty much every day in the summertime when I was growing up, called Kilwin's. Started up in Michigan, and it's a hometown favorite of mine, probably because of my aunt. She would always tell us to go get her some, and I always would get some as well, and it was called French Silk. It's a smooth chocolate ice cream with semi-sweet chocolate chunks. Some people have espresso ice cream or mocha ice cream with it too, and honestly, that sounds phenomenal. But the original that I've always had was just the one from Kilwin's, and it's great. I will say, I also love gelato as well. Central Market, my local grocery store here, has an incredible strawberry gelato that I've never shied away from. Unfortunately, it's out of stock a lot of the time, like 90% of the time, but when I see it, I always make sure to get some. Next one. What are your favorite songs on Folklore? If you're not familiar, Folklore is Taylor Swift's new album that's been out for probably a month now. And if you follow me on Twitter at WillDeFries, you may have seen my preliminary ranking of songs from Folklore. I do love this album. I think it's the perfect quarantine album, and I think it's the perfect fall album. It lacks a little bit of energy that our old albums have, but I think the tone of it is perfect for this time of year and just how this year's gone altogether. I'm not shying away from a little toned down Taylor Swift at all. My favorite songs have somewhat changed since my original tweet, but my favorites in no particular order are The One, which is a great first song. I'm not really sure why, but I always seem to like the first songs on Taylor Swift's albums. Maybe I'm weird in that, or maybe she just puts heaters in the beginning, but either way, I'm not going to shy away from it. Invisible String, I really like the imagery. It's kind of a bop. I'll say that. I'm not too ashamed to say that it's a bop, but it's probably one of my top two songs on the album. Every time I go in my car, I always end up putting on Invisible String at some point. The next one is August. People did not like that I liked August this much, but it's an end of summer love song, and it kind of got the best of me. I grew up in a town where we had a lot of summer residents, and if we ever hung out with people, whether it was romantic or just friendships, the end of summer was always kind of bittersweet because you just had to say goodbye to these people that you used to hang out with. The next one's Betty. This one took a little bit for me to warm up to, but a couple friends reached out, and it made me realize that it's just full circle Taylor Swift. It sounds a lot like her old songs, and I really enjoy it. But I think the song that I listened to the most on the album, which I don't think it's my favorite, but I definitely have listened to it most, is Last Great American Dynasty. I put a meme up on the Sunday Scaries Instagram page, sunday.scaries, if you're looking to follow it. And it's evident that I really enjoy this song, and I've overplayed it. I expect it to see on my Spotify end of the year playlist for sure. And yes, for those wondering, I'm still listening to this album way too much, even though I've been listening to it pretty much nonstop for the last month. The next one, do you have any go-to recipes through the week and on Sundays? The answer here is yes and no. We have our staple meals through the week, but we often meal prep something that we can do for lunch for a few days. Our staple recipes and meals for dinner when we actually are making stuff are pretty simple, straightforward recipes. The first is steak or duck with potatoes, carrots, or just a side salad. I like having some protein. I like kind of the good old-fashioned meat and potatoes kind of meal, and it always kind of creeps into our diet every week or so. Another one is dinosaur kale Caesar salads with a protein on top, whether that protein's chicken, steak, or maybe just, sometimes we do crab cakes, maybe some salmon. I'm not really sure. But it's always nice to mix in a salad and not just have some huge dinner. And the kale Caesar salad always does pretty well with that, especially with some homemade Caesar dressing. The next one is a Whole30 recipe that was actually from Define Dish, and it's fish Florentine. I've talked about it once before. And you can look up this recipe, and it's absolutely phenomenal. It's a Whole30 recipe, but don't let that sway you. It's an incredible tasting fish dish, and I crave it every single time that it gets brought up that we could make it. And then all the other nights, we pretty much do takeout once or twice a week if we're feeling lazy. And usually that takeout's ramen, pizza, or Popeyes. For meal prep, though, we have some staples as well. We do a breakfast hash that's sweet potatoes, sausage, peppers, onions, whatever you want to put in a hash. What we found is that it reheats really, really well, and it keeps throughout the entire week, and so it's just a really easy thing to have around all the time. Another one is a quinoa salad. It's quinoa with a bunch of vegetables, some spices put in there, and Sally really does all the work on this one. It's filling, it keeps well, and it pairs pretty much with any protein, so if you have some leftover steak or chicken or whatever, you can always just toss them on top, and it's just a nice salad whether you're eating it hot or cold. And I believe this recipe was from A Pinch of Yum on Instagram, so I assume if you Google it, you could probably find it. The final one is chicken salad. You can either eat it on a bed of lettuce or a sandwich, and it's perfect for a little snack as well. I've always been a fan of chicken salad. It's weirdly something I crave a lot when I'm hungover, which doesn't really make a ton of sense to me. But chicken salad for me is just great, and it's so versatile. We eat it a lot. But before we get into more questions, let's hear from this week's presenting sponsor. If you're looking to reduce unnecessary trips out and trying to avoid sold-out grocery stores, then check out Sunbasket. It's a perfect and delicious solution for the times we're living in. I've used Sunbasket, I got some in the mail, and I was pleasantly surprised with not only the quality of the food, but the ease of the recipes. Sunbasket delivers healthy, delicious meals straight to your door. They have delicious recipes for all kinds of dietary preferences, including paleo, gluten-free, Mediterranean, vegetarian, and more. They make it easy and convenient with everything pre-portioned and ready to prep and cook. You can enjoy a full dinner of organic produce and clean ingredients in as little as 15 minutes, no matter how much experience you have in the kitchen. Each week, Sunbasket offers a wide range of recipes to choose from, so you can have mouth-watering dishes such as hoisin steak strip lettuce cups with pickled daikon and carrots, roasted salmon with miso-glazed eggplant, black bean tostadas Diablo with cabbage slaw and guacamole. The list is really never-ending. You can order from any recipes across their menu, skip a week whenever you need to, or even double up on your favorite recipes if you've got a busy week ahead of you. It's simple and easy with truly no gotchas. And best part, Sunbasket facilities have the highest levels of food and employee safety. They are reinforcing strict adherence to their existing standard operating procedures and increasing sanitization frequency in their distribution centers in order to protect you and your family. Right now, Sunbasket is offering $35 off of your order when you go right now to sunbasket.com/scaries and enter promo code SCARIES at checkout. That's sunbasket.com/SCARIES and enter promo code SCARIES at checkout for $35 off of your order. sunbasket.com/scaries and enter promo code SCARIES. Next question. We know what you do on Sundays. What do your Saturdays look like? My Saturdays these days don't vary too much from my Sundays, to be honest with you. Back in, I don't know, 3 or 4 or 5 years ago, 10 years ago, my Saturdays were a lot different. Some day drinking, brunches, things like that. But these days, I try to wake up early, around 7. I have an internal clock that just wakes me up way too early these days, but I've kind of just leaned into it. I usually make a coffee or tea, toss on some soccer. Right now, we're out of season, but give it a week and we'll have some more. If I'm invested, I'll watch the entire game without really any distractions. But if not, I'll do some work or scroll Twitter and Instagram and just look up when I hear the crowd or announcers start to get excited. We've been doing a little routine lately where we've been going to a restaurant called Swedish Hill where we pick up pastries or bread for the week. And then we try to plan an afternoon activity, whether it's lunch with friends or family, swimming, going to the park, maybe some retail therapy, just a little distraction in the afternoon, nothing too heavy. Maybe have an afternoon beer. But then I can go to a group dinner, that's been much tougher these days, or just do something with friends, which we've kind of started doing more things at home. So yeah, I like to get together with friends because Saturday is really the best day to do it, obviously, for so many reasons. I don't really need to explain that to you. Then I'd like to probably fall asleep watching a movie that we rented or a new release on Netflix or Hulu or something like that. Yes, like I said, my Saturdays are much different now than they were even a few years ago, but I'm enjoying them. What's your ideal dinner party? Food, drinks, attendees? Well, one time, and this has nothing to do with an actual dinner party that I went to because I did not go to it, but I was in the grocery store one day and it was a cold, rainy fall day. I saw a guy and he was dressed like he was probably from out of town. And I looked over and he had 3 giant cases of decoy wine. If you're familiar with decoy, there's a duck on it. It looks very fall feeling. And he had a bunch of red. I don't know if it was their red blend, their cab, whatever it is. Maybe he had a whole assortment. But then next to that, he had a bunch of Two Hearted Ales, the beer that I just talked about. And as he put them up on the counter, he just had all of that. And I looked and I said, that guy's about to have an incredible fall dinner party during this storm. And so it really got me thinking about fall dinner parties, and what I came up with was just that I kind of just want a giant table where everyone can sit together. Whether it's a picnic table inside, whether you have to go somewhere that just has a larger space, I just like having everyone sitting at the same table at a dinner party. And so I just want that table covered in bottles of wine and beers to drink, and everyone's their own bartender. I don't want the host to be mixing drinks for everybody when we are all capable of doing it ourselves. We know what we like. We can all do our own drinks. And then as for food, I would love some food directly off the grill or even then served family style. People don't need to be getting up mid-dinner to go get more. Just put it all on the table and just make sure that everyone's fed and happy and having a good time. As for the ambiance, maybe some candles, low lights, definitely no overhead lights. If you got lamps, turn all the lamps on. I don't want any overhead lights on though. Some jazz music playing in the background, maybe an upbeat classic rock playlist, whatever it may be. Some Van Morrison will always hit in that situation. And then casually dressed. I don't want anyone too dressed up for a dinner party at my house or somebody else's house unless there's a special occasion. But if we're just getting together, just dress casually. Just put on some khakis and a sweater and enjoy yourself. And then after dinner, I like it when everyone goes outside, whether it's cold or warm or whatever, for an outdoor activity. It can be a campfire, just having some drinks on a covered porch, maybe head down to a beach and just look at the water for a little bit. But it's always nice to kind of have a nightcap and recap the night just enjoying yourselves outdoors. This is a question that I've never been asked before, but I could not be more excited to answer. And that is, what is your favorite episode of Frasier? I've been a longtime watcher of Frasier. My parents started watching it when I was growing up, and I really thought they were British, but I guess they were just rich and they talked like rich people. And then I started watching it on Lifetime in my 20s. Lifetime started playing episodes every night for like 3 hours. And when I was just feeling lazy, I'd just sit in a recliner and just watch Frasier all the time. It just was kind of a nice way to unwind. My all-time favorite episodes, though, in no particular order, are The Ski Lodge. And this one was when Roz wins a weekend at a ski lodge and trades it to Frasier. Daphne invites along her friend Annie, who's a swimsuit model, and Frasier's taken with her. But she's interested in Niles, which is kind of off the beaten path for a lot of females in that show. And so one of the reasons it's the best episode is just the writing. The way that they structured the entire episode, it was just perfect. Every single line seems to have some weight to it, and it's just absolutely hilarious how every single storyline that exists separately are all intermingled in this ski lodge. It's absolutely hilarious, and honestly, the vibes of the episode are great. If you like ski lodges, just give it a try. The next one is The Seal Who Came to Dinner, which was season 6, episode 8. This was when Niles' Gourmet Club has its annual Golden Apron Awards, and he decided he wanted to throw a dinner party in hopes of obtaining the illustrious apron. He and Fraser break into Maris's cottage to hold the festivities, and I don't want to spoil too much for you, but things go very, very south during this dinner party. It involves a dead animal, it involves some other stuff. It's just outrageous and hilarious, and the way that they try to cover up for everything is just great. The third is called Decoys, Season 6, Episode 16. And I have to say, Season 6 is my favorite season just for these three episodes that I'm about to talk about. The one that I just talked about, The Seal Who Came to Dinner, was Season 6, Episode 8, and Decoys is Season 6, Episode 16. This is when Donnie, who was going out with Daphne, Niles wasn't super happy about that, but Donnie managed to get something for Niles out of his divorce settlement, which was Maris' lakefront cottage called Shady Glen. This is a very, very fall-feeling episode, probably one of the most fall-feeling episodes that you could actually have of Frasier. And this is kind of like the ski lodge. Every single person has their own storyline and their own ambitions in the episode, but the way that they all mingle and come together is just absolutely hilarious. It's probably my second favorite episode, and I'll get to my favorite one in a second. But the next one is The Dinner Party, which is Season 6, Episode 17, the one right after Decoys. Frasier and Niles decide to host a dinner party at Frasier's apartment, but the planning quickly becomes complicated and leads them to think that they might be spending too much time together. Any dinner party episode I'm in on, so if they're planning an event together, it's always just really good. But my all-time favorite episode, hands down, bar none, and this is not like a widely loved episode, I just think it's absolutely hilarious, is called Row to Perdition, Season 10, Episode 18. Row is spelled R-O-E, it's a tribute to caviar. And this is an episode where Frasier and Niles acquire an inside source of top-quality caviar and become dealers to the rest of Seattle's elite. It's hilarious because they're essentially drug dealers, but they're dealing caviar in exchange for dinner party invites, opera tickets, whatever it may be. And once they start, they get addicted to this caviar. They kind of treat it like cocaine. And it's just absolutely hilarious to see something as ridiculous as black market high-end caviar be treated as this substance that everyone can't get their hands on. It's a hilarious episode, and the reason I knew it was funny is because someone that I trust with their taste in television who had never seen Frasier before did not believe that it would be as funny as I said it was, and when I sat them down and watched it with them, I didn't do the thing where I kept on looking over to see if they were laughing, but I could hear him laughing the entire time, and after the episode was over, he said to me, "Will, you were absolutely right. That was hilarious." So, just, if you're going to do one, try Road to Perdition. I really liked it. Or The Ski Lodge or Decoys are also great ones, too. Any of those you'll be happy with. Next question. After reading A Year in Provence, where would you like to live for a year? So I've read this book twice now, and my copy is actually stained with red wine, which kind of seems appropriate. If you don't know what the book is about, here's the synopsis that they give on Amazon. In this witty and warm-hearted account, Peter Mayle tells what it's like to realize a long-cherished dream and actually move into a 200-year-old stone farmhouse in the remote country of Luberon. I don't know if that's correct. It's somewhere in France. With his wife and two large dogs. He endures January's frosty mistral as it comes howling down the Rhone Valley, discovers the secrets of goat racing through the middle of town, and delights in the glorious regional cuisine. A Year in Provence transports us all into the earthy pleasures of provincial life and lets us live vicariously at a tempo governed by seasons, not by days. Living in northern Michigan for so long, I kind of know what it's like to live in solitude in a place like that, and I'm not really yearning to do that more. I'm not opposed to going back to that life at some point, but if I'm going to live somewhere for just a year, I want it to be a little more upbeat because I already know what it feels like to spend a year somewhere where things are slow moving and dictated by the seasons, or not days, like they said. I've never really lived in a cold northern city for a very long period of time, but there are four or five cities that I would entertain for a year. The first one is one that is kind of surprising to me, which is New York. I kind of hate New York City, but I think I'd like to do it for a year just to prove myself and say, hey, I did it, and then just get out and probably never return. I have no plans to go to New York anytime soon, but it's always a fun place to visit for a weekend. I would like to see if I could stay there for a year, but I'm afraid that from what I've heard from all my friends who've lived there, that it does suck you in, and I don't know if living there for a year would be a good idea because I might end up just realizing 10 years down the road that I've been living in New York for a decade. Another one is London. I've been there twice and I am in love with it, but there's so much of the city that I've never seen before, given that I'm essentially a tourist. And so I would like to spend way more time there to get around and not just go hit all the sights or to take walks in the touristy parts the entire time. It helps that I do have some friends there, so I think I could kind of blend in pretty easily and have some fun. But I think London's one of those. Another one, which is kind of just London light for me, is Edinburgh. And I think I would actually like this more because I think it's a little slower paced. I like the vibe of Scotland a lot more than I like the vibe of London. And when I went there, I kind of fell in love with it. And so I think that Edinburgh would probably be the number one choice on this list. But if I had to stay in the States, I would say no to New York and probably go to Seattle or Portland. I don't know a ton about the Pacific Northwest, and I think this would be a great time to explore it. I've never been to either of those, and so why not just throw myself in? From what I can tell, Seattle seems like a great city for me, and I've had people recommend it to me, so maybe it's the move. Next question. How did you learn so much about fonts and typography? I do all the graphic design for Sunday Scaries. I do it all for our other podcasts on the Wash Media Network. And even though I've gotten help from a friend of mine, Alfonso Ruiz, he's done the logo and some t-shirt designs. I do a lot of the design work just because I enjoy doing it and I'm not too bad at it. My graphic design prowess started in, I guess, early high school, and I'm almost all self-taught. I illegally downloaded a copy of Photoshop on my parents' computer, and I just messed around with it and ended up getting really good at it. I always liked drawing, I always liked art, and so I was kind of primed to be decent at that. And I just really liked it. And so for about 2 years, I would just mess around on the program, make funny photos of my friends, or make fake posters for things. I would do like fake Oasis posters. I really liked Oasis at the time when I downloaded it, and I remember just making all these like random posters for their concerts and things like that. But then once I became a senior in high school, I took an independent class for a year in high school where I ended up winning a design award, and that kind of inspired me to do it more. Right before this competition, it was a design competition, I didn't realize that you had to do a graphic design element to it, and so for the 2 days before the competition, I just did this graphic design project, and I couldn't even go to the competition because I had a tennis tournament. And I got a text message from a friend that said, dude, they just announced that you won the entire thing for the graphic design, and I couldn't have been more happy. I never really wanted to pursue it full time because I think sitting behind a computer and doing design for other people sounds pretty miserable. And so I didn't want to major in it or anything like that. But I did get a graphic design job in college. It was mostly just doing remedial Photoshop work, like I said, for other people. But the team that I worked with was great. The person that managed me was incredible, and they inspired me a lot. And luckily, I had a lot of people around me that I learned a lot from. And so that kind of took me from having this self-taught knowledge to having a little more polished professional knowledge of things. But even now, I don't still have that classically trained graphic designer knowledge of things. I know how to make things look good on a screen, but when it comes to printing and doing things like that, I'm just terrible. And so now I've pretty much done graphic design in some capacity at every job since, and I still enjoy it, even though I feel like I'm kind of losing my touch a little bit sometimes. A lot of it's trial and error. You just have to think, what looks good to you? What doesn't? You have to see what your inspiration is. I think getting inspiration is a huge thing. A lot of people ask how I get photos for the Sunday Scaries feed, and it's because I just follow a lot of people on Instagram, on Tumblr, and I save things that inspire me, and I use them going forward. I try not to copy too much, but I do use things as inspiration. And the most important thing, though, is to find your style and then stick with it. I think a lot of people want to mimic what other people are doing, and I think there's definitely a difference between inspiration and mimicking. But find your style, stick with it, and just make sure that if somebody sees something, they're like, oh, that person did that. I think that most people can tell what I do at this point, which I appreciate. And now, for our final question this week, what is my ideal fall Sunday? This is just a phenomenal question and one that is very perfect to end this on. And so this is my ideal one. I would love to wake up in a log cabin on Lake Michigan. My friend had a cabin that his family owned for a long time, and it kind of became like a second summer home to me growing up a little bit. I would always go out with them and enjoy it. And just being able to wake up and hear the waves crashing and look out on the lake, it was great. And when the wind's really howling over Lake Michigan and the waves are crashing, there's nothing more relaxing. Then I would make a coffee and enjoy it outside while bundled up as the waves come in. Make a breakfast all in a cast iron skillet, maybe some eggs, sausage links, bacon, just a lot of that. And then maybe take a late morning walk where I'm playing fetch with my dog. Then after that, come home, watch the Lions win against the Packers in just an incredible fashion, all while reading a book and having a candle going. Maybe as a little appetizer during the game or in the second half is a cheese board in the late afternoon or some wine and craft beers to go along with it. And then afterwards have a big dinner, whether it's steak, pasta, anything seasonal. I'm down for it all as long as it's very fall feeling. I don't know, maybe even do a pot roast. After that, get in bed, crack a window so I can hear everything outside, the trees brushing on each other, the waves crashing in, just everything, and then fall asleep with the fireplace going. It's not much, but yes, it does sound perfect to me. If you liked what you heard today, make sure to subscribe, review, or tell a friend in need about this podcast. By subscribing, you guarantee that each and every episode gets delivered directly to your phone every Sunday morning. You can also follow along on Twitter at SundayScaries and Instagram, which is at Sunday.Scaries, or you can follow me on both Twitter and Instagram at WillDeFreeze. And remember, always trim the wicks on your scented candles. See you next Sunday.